live from Burbank, California, where the streets are paved with leaf blowers. It's the Mark Maron Show. And now, noise laws be damned, Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim. Good evening, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. Of course, you lurking conservatives, pain sponges and need machines. And you good progressive people out there, thank you for coming down out of your trees for the show, or perhaps you're listening to the show in the tree. I don't know what exactly is going down there at the South Central Farm here in Los Angeles, but they busted about 40 people yesterday, Daryl Hannah being one of them. And you know what's sad about this whole damn thing now is that apparently a private fund, a private in the Annenberg Fund, I'm not sure, but a progressive rich fund made a donation of the money that was required to buy the farm. And now the cranky old bastard, Ralph Horowitz, who owns the lot, says he's so pissed off at these protesters and these farmers that he wouldn't sell it for $100 million. That is so condescending and so tickling. It's so typical of a kind of like owner baron disposition to where like, oh, I would have done it had they respected me, had they been grateful that I let them plant their potatoes on my patch of land for the last year or three or four or five. But no, they showed me no love, no respect, so now they get nothing. I will gladly plow under their livelihood and their food source to put a warehouse there for a Walmart. What a great example of a lack of compassion. This might be the thing that gets this guy into heaven. Or at least clear his conscience, make his kids love him again. But no, can't do it. Not right now. Who knows what's going to happen with that? I still think it's a good cause. I still think, I hope, that some progress can be made. There's a couple of interesting things that happened today. I'll get into that in a second. Let me tell you who's on the show. Sam Cedar. Hopefully will be on the show. He's supposed to be here 15 minutes ago. He's doing a reading tomorrow night in Venice. I got information about that. It's at 8 o'clock tomorrow night. I just have an address. That's the sad thing. I don't know where it is, but I have an address in Venice. It's 826 Valencia in Venice tomorrow night at 8 o'clock for Sam Cedar.
Just go to Venice. It's a real small place.
I guess maybe it's a private event, Charlie? What are you giving me the don't land sign? All right. I'll get you more details when Cedar gets here. He's supposed to be here. I don't even know if he landed. I'm gonna have to call. So we'll get on that in a second. Marjorie Cohn is a professor at Thomas Jefferson School of Law. She writes a weekly column for truthout.org. She also travels around the world giving lectures on international law. Will be with us to talk about Guantanamo Bay and also about Aaron Watata, the first lieutenant in the Army who has been protesting his deployment in Iraq. And hopefully we are going to talk to him by the end of the week. John Amato, our old friend from Crooks and Liars, will be on the phone with us in just a little while. Ethan Smith, the music industry critic for the Wall Street Journal, is going to be talking to us about the Dixie Chicks. And Angus McFarquhar, of course, our international reporter at the World Cup. Now, I have some first impressions here. Now, my first impressions, of course, by the time this show gets on, are going to be some of the last impressions of the day about the Government Accountability Office study on FEMA, on how some of these, some of the credit cards that they issued, some of the checks that they issued to victims of the hurricane were somehow abused. And the list of things that they chose to show were the abuses, I found to be not so much indicting FEMA, but I feel that this is a real gesture on behalf of maybe the administration, I don't know who. But it seems to be blaming the victims. It seems to be characterizing the victims of Katrina as being these, you know, what would you call them? Reckless, kind of spend the money on whatever. The examples they made were just very telling and very peculiar. Now, maybe FEMA made an oversight. Clearly, FEMA did not do a good job with hardly anything. But given the situation, I'm not saying I'm going to be sympathetic completely, but given the situation that something had to be done immediately and there wasn't a real way to check it, granted there should have been some sort of bureaucracy in place, some way of assessing who got the money, why they got the money, granted that wasn't there, but they had to get this help out to people. Now, obviously people are going to take advantage. That's what people do. I'd be hard-pressed to say myself if I got two checks for $2,000 from the same place, would I say, hey, hey, here's your $2,000 back. You must have made a mistake. Or would you sit on it for a few weeks, see if anything happened, and deposit the check. I don't know what I would do. I would probably send the check back, but people are people, so a lot of money got spent on probably the wrong things, and some people did out-and-out fraud and bilked the government for whatever they could get. But I just it just feels to me, I mean, the GAO is claiming that it's up to $1.5 billion of fraud of people that were just blowing money or ripping the government off. That seems incredibly high to me. A woman who represents FEMA said it is not that high, that they didn't look at their study was not statistically correct, that it's only in the millions, 16, 17 million. But the list that they provided in front of the public and everybody else, to me, was very peculiar. FEMA said that one of the victims of Katrina had an all-inclusive one-week Caribbean vacation in the Punta Cana Resort in the Dominican Republic, five-season tickets to New Orleans Saints professional football games, adult erotica products in Houston, and Girls Gone Wild videos in Santa Monica, California.
Sounds like Tom DeLay.
Yeah, that was the joke I was going for. That was what I was headed towards. But I guess we probably should have covered it before the show. Dom Perignon champagne and other alcoholic beverages. I just felt that they were trying to make the victims, you know, look like these, you know, horrendous people that just anybody. Look, who's to say what you need after a horrendous hurricane? Who's to say what you're going to need to make yourself feel better? Maybe these were emergency spendings. One guy apparently got a sex change operation. You know, that might have been an emergency 2 years ago. Who knows what kind of discomfort that guy was in, and he saw this storm as a gift so he could finally be the woman he wanted to be. I mean, who the hell's to judge what emergency money is? Now, granted, in the cases of out-and-out stealing money from the government, they should obviously be taken to task. But in terms of people getting the money appropriately, who's to say what is an emergency?
You know what? I say, you know, this is going to come off kind of radical, but I say more power to them. I think it's a good thing, you know, because, look, you know, these are people who are giving a lot of their tax dollars to corporate welfare and funding an illegal war in the Mideast. You know, why not screw the government out of a few thousand dollars? I think it's a good thing. You know, I'm not telling people to go out and break the law. Yeah. I'm just saying, hey.
Yeah. All right. Well, there you go. I think that... That, honestly, where's the accountability of the people that were giving out the no-bid contracts? Where's the accountability for all of the money that went into relief in that area? The billions of dollars that go into rebuilding the Gulf region? Where's the accountability of that cash and who gets that cash and which one of the Bush's cronies get that cash and who's in line to get that cash to rebuild what and for what reason? Where's that accountability? Here they are giving a report on people who bought a bottle of Dom Perignon. They can get that specific about a $2,000 check and where that money went on a victim of this horrendous tragedy of this country, yet it's questionable as to where the money's going to the rebuilding effort. I mean, that's the heinous, stilted BS of this administration, is that here we've got these detailed statistics about how Joe Blow spent, you know, $50 on a bottle of champagne or got his penis removed, yet we don't know, you know, where the billions of dollars in government contracts are going and how they're being spent, either in the Gulf region or Iraq or anywhere. That is the focus that disturbs me. And speaking of Iraq, look, I don't know what the hell the president thinks he's doing there. There was an interesting thing on Media Matters. I don't know if Amato had it on his side on Crooks and Liars, but there was just something very funny on Media Matters. It had a picture of Snow. What's the guy's name? Tony Snow? Is it Tony Snow, the new press secretary? And that other idiot, what's that, Dan Bartlett, the White House spokesman, on a chopper wearing helmets and flak jackets, looking petrified. Petrified. And they were with the president's junket to Iraq. They had a photograph of them on Fox News of them on the chopper. And Dan Bartlett looked like he was about to crap himself. He probably did.
Looked like a still shot from Gomer Pyle.
He totally did. But the question they asked that I thought was interesting is, where's the picture of Bush wearing the same outfit? I would have loved to have seen that. But you know what? They regulated that. They censored that. I don't know if someone was there to take it, but that would have been too damaging to this president to have him wearing the doofus outfit. Do you know what I mean? There's no way you can look cool in a flak jacket and a helicopter helmet. There's just no way you can look cool. especially if you're not accustomed to wearing that kind of outfit. I mean, certainly when they when he climbed out of that plane with the, you know, the prosthetic penis pack that he did on that battleship during Mission Accomplished, that was all, he looked like a superhero, kind of, to those of us who thought, like, you know, what the hell's going on in his pants? That can't be right. What the hell does he think? Who was he fooling with that? That looked ridiculous. But this, there would have been no way to make it ridiculous. But I think my point is, it's interesting how they can censor the press so effectively that the guys he's flying with, you get a picture of them looking like that, but they made sure that a picture of the mighty leader, the, you know, the fake Christian blow monkey puppet of the neocon death cult, no picture of him wearing the doofus helmet. And I'm not calling people wear those helmets doofuses, but, you know, look, I'm so sick of Glenn Beck's commercials running during my show. I'm not going to criticize who they take money from to get ad sales on this on this network, but Glenn Beck is an ass. And he's an ass for the other side, and he's pretending to not be an ass. He's a bigger ass than Tucker Carlson because he's a hate-filled, evil sucker. Do you understand what I'm saying? That's what Glenn Beck is. He deserves nothing, certainly not a voice. All right, anyways, hey, great show. Sam Cedar, is he here or what? No? Yes? All right, all right, just hang out.
Ladies, he's going to birth his next baby in Namibia.
Thank you,
Mark
Jim.
Maron.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Jim.
You're welcome.
Where the hell is Sam Cedar? I don't understand this. I'm opening for him tomorrow night. I don't know if I'm opening. I'm introducing him. I don't know. Are you calling him? He's supposed. I think he's in. He should be here. He said today. Today was the day he was supposed to come in the studio. I prepared. Is he on the phone? Sam Cedar.
Hello?
Cedar, it's Maron. Why are you not here?
Well, I'll tell you, there's two reasons.
Yeah.
One, I'm taking a nap, and two is I'm in San Francisco.
What the hell is this? How come you're on the schedule to come in today to my show?
Well, maybe you should ask yourself that. Maybe if you had a better staff, you'd still be doing mornings.
Oh, yeah, blame my... Oh, geez, that was a good one, Sam. That was a good one. Maybe if you had more talent, you would have made it as a television personality.
Well, yeah, touche. I don't know what to tell you, buddy.
How's that book selling, too? What's it called? Flanking?
FUBAR, America's Right-Wing Nightmare, FUBAR.
So you got a whole little thing to pitch it like that, huh?
Yeah, well, actually, I'm doing Benjamin doing me.
Oh, John Benjamin, sure. He's a guy that actually stuck in the entertainment game, whereas
you cannot believe
what?
The hotel they're putting me in.
What, Sam?
Check this out,
what?
Okay?
Yeah.
I'm walking right now on a cordless phone.
Right.
And wait a second. Hello?
Hello?
Hey,
what's
I'm
up?
In the bathroom.
Oh, no.
I'm back in the bathroom, Mark.
That's terrific, Sam.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad that they're treating you well.
Oh, God, are you kidding? Hold on for one second. Let me switch back over to the cordless. Hey,
oh,
what's up?
This is good times. Good
bathroom
radio.
Bathroom phone.
So,
cordless phone.
What I want to know, Sam,
yeah,
is back when you were directing I'm with Busey for Comedy Central.
Right.
Now, were you thinking like, wow, this is going to take off?
Yeah. Yeah, I was.
I'm going to save all the
I
good.
I was, and then I thought, oh, my God, I'm going to commit suicide.
Yeah.
Because this is going to drive me crazy. Maron, you know, I'll tell you something.
What?
Walking the streets of San Francisco immediately takes me back to the time I served an internship with you.
That's right. Back when I used to drag you to gigs, make you watch me drink, and then say, come on, dude, open for me. And you'd say, no, I'm too frightened to be funny in front of...
Well, I didn't say that.
You said, nah, I don't think so.
Which sometimes I would.
Yeah.
Sometimes I opened up for you, but usually I just enjoyed watching you come to the coffee shop and one day swear off coffee and cigarettes, the next day bring a filterless pack of cigarettes and smoke 20 of them.
Yeah, well, that's the way I work, Sam. You know, it keeps things interesting. One day it's like, hey, look at me, I'm done with it. The next day it's like, who knew, I'm back.
I know. It was impressive. I actually... I actually wrote a postdoc thesis on that.
Yeah, how did you really? How'd that go? Can I see a copy of that? Can I see a copy of the movie that I'm in that you were not able to?
I'm finishing it. I'm in the midst of finishing it. Mark, yeah, I have so many projects going on. It's almost unbelievable.
Really? Well, you finished a book. That's impressive. But from what I understand, you didn't write very much of it.
No, I didn't write any of it. Stephen wrote most of the whole thing, and I just slapped my name on there. That's the way you do it now.
Yeah. And how is it going with the book events out on the road? You're going to come in tomorrow. You're going to come in here tomorrow for most of the show, and probably if you could, I'd like you to teach me some of the stylings that you've evolved an amazing radio style, being able to convey a lot of information in an irritating way.
Yeah.
that keeps you kind of alert.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it's all about. I spent an hour doing the Michael Medved show yesterday. You know who he is? He's one of these
right-wing freaks. Yeah.
He's not a real big bomb thrower, but the best part was one of his callers calls in and starts off this way: "Sam, I am not insane." And then he proceeds to tell me that I should be assassinating George Bush.
He wanted you to do it?
Yeah, he wanted me to do it.
That's interesting.
It's fantastic when, you know, these right wing types, the only way what they're saying makes sense is if they start with the predicate that they're not insane.
Well, the weird thing is they got nothing to stand on anymore. They've got no case for any of their positions.
No, you know, Josh Marshall put a post up about something I've been saying for
Josh,
a while now.
Your producer?
Josh Marshall from Talking Points Memo.
Okay.
The conservative ideology is dead.
Yeah.
It's dead. It's like Latin.
Yeah.
I mean, they have nothing.
Yeah.
It is the only basis they have for being conservative is equivalent to the same basis as to why I'm a Patriots fan.
Right.
You know, I grew up in that area, and that's the team I identify with. But there's no ideology there.
So you were with Medved. He does Movie Critic, too, right?
Yeah.
I remember that guy.
Yeah. I mean, it was pretty funny, too, because he says to me, he goes, you know, I haven't read your book, but you know how this goes, right? And I said, yeah, no problem. And then he begins to say, I'll tell you what I find really offensive about your book.
About your book, yeah. All right, so we're going to talk more about all of this tomorrow. I just wanted to say that I'm proud of you, buddy. I think you've done very well for a guy with that... I think you're pretty much driven by the spite that you have from dropping out of law school, and I think that you've done incredibly well with that.
I got to say that, Mark, when you have always been the fuel to my fire.
Come on, Jew. So you're going to read tomorrow, you're reading tonight in San Francisco.
Reading tonight in San Francisco, and then tomorrow
I'm opening for you.
Yeah. Thursday, you're going to open up for us.
Do I do jokes? How much time do I do?
Huh? Well, you just introduce us. But
right.
I have another role for you.
All right, tell me tomorrow. Tell me tomorrow.
Okay.
All right, bye.
Bye.
Now, Daryl Hannah is living in his tree. Mark Maron.
Oh, I could only wish and hope that Daryl Hannah was living in my tree. I have a tree. I have two trees that are big enough for her to live in. I'll tell you right now. I built the fence. I didn't build it. Guy built it. The guy who...
Your man did
who, it. Yeah, who usually comes over to my house and makes me feel small and ineffectual and makes my wife... the whole thing is complete straw dogs material. I have no idea... You don't know how, for some reason, every time Ernie comes over to fix something or build something for us, I'm chopping in the kitchen. It's like clockwork.
Then
man.
He gets on a ladder and looks through the bathroom window while Mishna's in there?
No.
I thought you said it was, you know, straw dogs-ish.
Well, the implication being that there's a lot of virile masculinity out there with tools while I'm in the kitchen doing math.
Oh, yeah, that's obvious.
Yeah, right. But I can work with tools. We've been over this. I just wanted to say that a U.S. House of Representatives panel yesterday voted to raise the U.S. minimum wage in increments to $7.25 an hour by January 1st, 2009. And this is just a panel. This is meaningless. This is just it means nothing. But yet today, the Congress gave itself a raise, $3,300 a year more, raising their salary from to $168,500.
It's going to trickle down.
That's a 2% cost of living raise that they gave themselves. Yet they had a panel talk about maybe getting it up to 7.25 by 2009. But I guess they voted like, hey, back, hey, who needs a little money? I can use a little more money. Huh? Come on, if they're giving out money, hell, let's take some money. Man.
It takes a long time to print all that money, Mark. You know, all that extra minimum wage money that's going to have to be printed for these people.
By 2009, we might not even have money anymore. The website Crooks and Liars, folks, is a crooksandliars.com is a clearinghouse of video and news clips that call the right out on their badness. Thank God it exists, because I don't have the time or know-how to watch all of the politically relevant clips that come out over the week. Media gnome and web posting wizard and former member of Duran Duran's touring act, John Amato, filters through all the crap that pours out of the tube and grabs the gems and posts them. Here he's with us again. Thanks for coming on, John.
Hey, Mark. Thanks for having me on.
Do you get mad when I play the Duran Duran card?
No, you can go for it.
Oh, man. So let's talk about what do you think about this news? Tell me about what happened this news conference this morning, this gaffe that our retarded leader did.
I know. You know, I just call it bizarro bushland.
Yeah.
I mean, you can always count on every time he has some sort of a press conference, it always going into, like, some zone that...
Yeah.
It's weird. It's just complete weirdness.
Yeah, yeah.
And a reporter who is blind stood up to ask him a question, and Bush started goofing on his glasses.
Really?
And it's like, said, you know, you're going to ask your question with shades on? The guy says yes. I mean, and Bush says there's no sun out here. And Walston, who is the reporter, said it depends on your perspective. And you know how Bush does that little goofy.
Yeah.
Is that touche, you know? But it's I mean, the guy's blind, and he's sort of making fun of him. And he does that a lot, actually. He thinks... It's a twisted sense of humor where they, you know, they think that they're being funny and they're attacking people's disabilities.
I literally think that a lot of times that anything that he's saying, he should just be saying, "Help me, I'm falling." Like he's literally scrambling from the second he opened his mouth. And I don't know if it's an act. Some people think it's a very well deliberated act on his part. I don't know. What do you think?
You know, I don't think so. I think this is just the best he can do. And you would imagine the amount of times that he has to go in front of the cameras, the amount of times that he has to speak to people. And I mean, I have a video somewhere where someone put together Bush, you know, in like the, you know, when he was running for governor.
Yeah.
And then how he talks now, and it's completely two different people. It's just amazing. He can barely get out, you know, his sentence without stumbling, and the way he talks it's like kindergarten language.
Yeah.
It's embarrassing that this guy is supposed to be the world leader, but he can't even talk. And then when he, you know, obviously went after Latino Americans, like, you know, you got to speak English. It's like, that would be good if you learned how to speak it, too.
Yeah, you do have the caption on there. I just talked about this a few minutes ago with Dan Bartlett and Tony Snow in the helicopter. That is hilarious. I mean, really, literally, it looks like Tony Snow is looking at Bartlett saying, did you crap your pants?
Get me out of here.
Yeah, yeah.
What are we doing here?
The point they make is very interesting, though. Where's the Bush picture? They could not risk that, that's for sure.
Oh, my God. I mean, and the whole meme of, you know, it's the journalist's fault, and all they write about and report is the bad news. And look at these guys. They have to sneak into Iraq. They don't even announce to anybody that they're going there. They show up 5 minutes. I mean, it's so dangerous there. And if you look at the picture, I mean, these two guys are scared. And
they really are. You're right.
A.C. Watts say, well, you know, it's okay because, you know, it is dangerous over there. I mean, now they're just really admitting that, you know, this is a quagmire. It's a nightmare. It's a terror zone. And yet, you know, Bush will say, oh, everything is fine.
Yeah, it's interesting about terror zone, about the way the language works, because I watched that clip on your site. I didn't see it the other night. Sometimes I just can't watch all the television of John Stewart and Ken Melman.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I believe that Ken Melman has sexual identity issues. I believe that he is attracted to abuse and also attracted to John Stewart. They're the same religion. You know, I think they see that maybe something could happen there, that he thinks that. But John Stewart, very easily just reamed the guy, which I think is what he wanted, because he didn't seem to know that it was happening. But there was a moment during it where Melman used the frame terror, fighting the war on terror, and I think John Boehner, in the Congress is trying to pass a resolution about the war on terror and the difference between terrorists and insurgents. And I think John wanted to go into the difference and call him on that, but he didn't.
Yeah, you know, it was, you know, I've been putting up these clips of his interviews, and I mean, it really, he just lines them up, you know, and shoots them down so easily. You could just see, if people go and watch that clip, you could just see that he just actually just pulled back, because he could have just really made the guy start crying and maybe never want, you know, and these Republican wingnuts are going to stop coming on the show because, you know, why can't our 24/7 supposed news media just ask the pointed, simple questions that he does, that for some reason these guys just fall down on their faces? And when he told them to stop using the hands, because, you know, whenever Melman's going, he has that karate chop when he's talking.
Yeah.
I mean, Melman was just completely, like, in awe of him. But what I thought was really interesting, the most interesting part, was when, you know, Melman said how Afghanistan was a failed state. Did you catch that?
I watched it again. I didn't catch that.
It's like, it's towards the end of the clip where he's trying to give a speech about the war on terror, and we got to go with, you know, we can't leave Iraq because look what's happened to Afghanistan. You know, like, in other words, saying that the Taliban and all the psychos are back there attacking and blowing stuff up, and Afghanistan is turning into another, you know, green zone nightmare.
Dude, since mid-May in Afghanistan, over 500 people have been killed. They're planning an offense tomorrow with 11,000 of the international forces to take on the Taliban. Apparently, over the last year, when the U.S. left Afghanistan, the Taliban was running around with like 19 guys in little packs. But now they're up over 100. They're well armed. They have horses. They have RPGs. I mean, the whole thing is back.
Yeah, it's really sad. You know, I never understood this. Just, I mean, I know the ideology. I know why they went into the war, but, you know, Afghanistan could have been this model of democracy that they talk about in the Middle East, because they could have really, you know, everyone had no problem with them going after Osama bin Laden, going after, you know, getting rid of the Taliban, and going in there and doing the right thing. And they could have set that country up as the model of democracy for the rest of the Middle East.
But easily.
They immediately abandoned it. And just watch the clip again. It gets to the end. I think it's really important. And another blogger, Christy from Fire Dog Lake, also picked up on it. Because, you know, it's really telling how, and lately, these Republicans have been slipping up in some of their on-camera appearances, although usually the interviewer misses it.
I don't know. You know, it's like John. I think they slip up, but I also think that some of them use John for their own devices. I think a lot of these guys are trying to distance themselves from the president. I think a lot of them are looking ahead to 2006 and 2008 and looking ahead to their political careers. I think people like Melman, certainly as the chair of the RNC, you know, he's got a broader future in politics. I think a lot of these guys, even on immigration as well and on the war, have been given the opportunity to distance themselves from the president.
You know, you're probably right, and they go on the show because obviously things will change in a couple of years. They want to be able to go on the show again and say, and say, look, now this has changed. You know, they want to be able to go back, and obviously Stewart has a smart audience and a younger audience than what, you know, Bill O'Reilly does.
But they trust John too. They trust John to be decent. You know, despite the fact, like, even when he said, he drew the line with Melman a couple times and said, look, you're not going to make a joke, are you? And, you know, the thing with the hands. But he was fairly, he really stifled his audience because he wanted to ask, cutting questions. But, you know, he went out of his way to say that, I feel sympathy for you because you have this horrible job of having to make these, you know, spray perfume on these turds.
Yeah, and really, that's all he had to say,
right?
Because that's the truth. Everybody knows the truth. And when you hit him with a statement like that, I mean, what is he going to say? He can't really respond because it's the truth. And I just saw John holding back because you could see, you know, when he had on Bill Kristol, he just killed him.
Yeah.
You know, when he had on some of the other neocons, I mean, he ripped. And with Melman, I just think he felt sorry for him, and he sort of pulled back, but he still reduced them to, like, I mean, you know how that guy is. I call, you know, I had a contest, and you know, for the you know, Ken Millman, you know, talking points action doll.
Yeah.
And because that's, you know,
yeah.
He does like the Chewbacca defense all the time.
And
he's so annoying.
He's a blaster. He just blasts talking points, and usually he's worked up. He was very very candid and charming on for being a an ugly, sexually confused Jewish guy. I thought he was very. Before we get out of here, just tell me, Glenn Beck is an ass, right? He's like a colossal ass. Did you see that stuff on Monday on his show when he was literally making masturbatory noises to the bombing of that safe house where two kids were killed along with Zarqawi?
That guy is the C-list talk show host that CNN decided to give, you know, to suck up to the conservative base. And I put up one clip of him, and if you search my site for Glenn Beck, you'll see the clip, and it's so asinine. The guy, talk about being confused. And, I mean, it's so god-awful that it was not worth my time to really monitor it and put up it, because it is just, nobody's going to pay attention. It's not going to get any ratings. And it's, I mean, it's...
He's horrible.
It's horrible.
He's pretending to not be an evil prick.
It's like he's trying to be this comedian and do all this weird,
awful.
And he can't pull it off. And I remember on the first clip, he was talking to a woman who was going to do news, and he was telling her that not wearing any underwear. And she's just going, okay.
Yeah.
I mean,
he doesn't know the parameters.
Oh my God, I have not wasted another time. I did it on his opening show, and that was enough.
All right, John. Well, thanks for doing what you're doing. It's great to talk to you. Sound well. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right, my friend. I'll talk to you later, Mark.
All right, that was John Amato, crooksandliars.com. Go there now. He's got some good clips. See the stuff we talked about and more. We will be back. I think we're going to get Angus McFarker on the phone. Stay with us.
And now, sprinkle me with brown sugar and call me to breakfast, because here's Mark Maron.
Oh, boy, somebody's feeling better today.
No, I'm actually sick. You got me sick. After 2 weeks of this thing, I caught what you have.
Oh, it's horrible. Wasn't it bad?
I'm coughing. I got the congestion.
Is this day one?
This is kind of like last night I got it.
You got it? Did you get the sore throat and everything else?
I don't know. What is the everything else?
Well, I got a sore throat, and I was my energy was way down, and my head hurt. The first couple of days were bad, and I still am very congested. Like, I can't go to the gym yet. That's like my big concern. When can I get back to the gym? Because if I don't go, I yell at things.
Jerry Lewis.
I yell at things if I don't go to the gym. But I'm balancing that with no coffee. I haven't had any coffee for 5 days because I was sick, and I just said, what the hell? Let's try it out.
Your poor liver?
No, that helps your liver. We covered that.
I know, but you need the coffee now.
No, I don't drink. I haven't drank in years. You know that. As you know, folks, the World Cup is currently taking place in Germany, and now with the latest news is our foreign correspondent, Angus McFarker. What's the latest, Angus?
Well, Mark, I must say things have been fairly peaceful so far. Nothing but a lot of geezers running around in short trousers. Ha! And you Yanks completely choking against the Czechs.
Uh-huh.
Football's not your game, Nancy. Should have stayed at home playing baseball in your frilly pink panties.
Well, okay, fine. One thing I'm glad about, there hasn't been any violence yet, Angus.
Aye, not yet. But the potential for violence here is magnificent. Think of it. The entire world coming together for symbolic warfare. A symphony of barely disguised hostility. Mark, the world understands two languages, football and hate.
Well, I guess playing in Germany doesn't exactly help, does it?
You said it. I'm here in Nuremberg, and I can still hear Adolf bloody Schickelgruber's jackboots echoing through the stadium.
Come on.
I think I just saw Lenny Riefenstahl setting up a camera. Plus, you got the best beer in the world here to get everyone all pissed and worked up. Two things that Jerry's do well, Mark. Beer and systematic genocide. Expect rivers of bloody pee this month, Mark.
All right, all right. Well, what about the soccer, Angus? Tell me about some of the matches you're looking forward to.
Oh, they'll be ripping off psychic scabs all over the place. Grudge match heaven. Arch enemies. Look who's here. England and Argentina, Serbia and Croatia, South Korea and Japan, Trinidad and Tobago.
Yeah, what about the U.S.?
Oh, maximum violence there. U.S. versus Mexico. Remember the Alamo.
Yeah.
U.S. versus Japan. Remember Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
U.S. versus Saudi Arabia. Remember 9/11. And the topper, U.S. versus Iran. That match could cause World War III. My man, sack gets all tingly just thinking about that one.
I'm sure it does. So any others there, Angus?
Oh, yeah. France versus Germany. Uh-huh. England versus Germany. Holland versus Germany. Poland versus Germany. It'll be like watching the History Channel. The guns are never own. Even Switzerland will get their hands dirty on this one. Rommel, you magnificent bastard. I read your book.
Hey, come on, Angus. That was 60 years ago. Is it really fair to keep reminding the Germans of the Nazis?
Mark, did the Nazis bomb Albuquerque?
No.
Did bugger off your poof. Oi, crouch. Sing with me. Scotland, Scotland, Uber
all
it.
All right, Angus. Angus.
Oi, Fritz, Hitler only had one ball, and so did your mother.
Please, Angus.
Come on, you Nazi wanker.
Come on.
Please. Let's see you blitzkrieg your way through, Angus.
Angus, please.
Hell no nuts. Master Ace, Master Peter, I say.
Angus.
Oi, Angus. Gonna send the Gestapo after Angus, are you? Well, say hi to this Eichmann.
Hello. All right. Well, that was Angus McFarker at the World Cup. Sounds like he's having a good time.
I think he has rage problems. Mark.
You know, I've been very good with it lately. Now, wait, let's talk about your cold a minute. So it comes on last night, and your energy goes away. You're listless. Your coffee, and you're getting some snot.
No, I was listless before it. Maybe that's what brought on the cold and.
Yeah, I think you carry a lot of worry and anger in you. You know, worry.
Well, you know, I'm working for this company for 2 years.
My friend.
It breeds it on.
My friend, worry. Let me tell you something. Worry is something you manufacture to make yourself miserable. Do you know that?
Oh, that's the biggest bunch of BS I've heard in my
worry
life.
Worry has no bearing on reality.
You create,
you're making it up.
You create, as my friend Larry Brown once said.
Larry Bubbles Brown, the philosopher.
You create your own reality, then, you know, if I could recreate my own reality, you'd be dead and have fins.
Yeah, but I don't think that's true. I think that certain people get very attached to their misery, and that is the way they live their life. That if you really had the gift of creating
what's
a reality.
What's the implication here?
The implication is I wish you and I could afford to not do anything.
I wish we could just afford.
Yeah, I can afford. I'm sorry, man. All right, we'll be back in a second.
Hey, wait a minute.
My friends from high school.
Hey, that's not a fat Canadian, it's Marc Maron.
That's the Dixie Chicks we're hearing right now. Can we hear it for a second? Do you have the whole song on there? You do? So let it roll a minute, because I didn't really assess the record. There's the first chord change. And then we're back to the first part. And then I think in a minute you're going to hear the other ones, and we're going to pick up and the drums kick in and maybe a fiddle. There it is. Look at that. I like her voice. All right, well, look, I know the Dixie Chicks is not a political cause or a movement, per se, in and of themselves. I do respect their nads to speak out and alienate a good part of their fan base, but now the chickens are coming home to roost, as some say. A bit, anyways. Ethan Smith is the music industry critic for the Wall Street Journal, and in his recent piece on the Dixie Chicks, he writes that there are a number of reasons that their U.S. tour might crap out. And not all of them because of what they said or think about the president. Welcome to the show, Ethan Smith.
Thanks for having me.
Do you hear the Dixie Chicks behind us?
I can.
Yeah. Do you like the record?
Well, yeah. Despite your intro, I'm not a critic. I'm a reporter, and it doesn't really matter whether I like it or not.
All right, hold on. I'll redo it. Ethan Smith is the music industry reporter for the Wall Street Journal. How's that? We good now?
Sounds good.
I mean, I don't want you to get mad at me right out of the gate.
No, I'm not mad. I'm just saying it doesn't, you know.
Do you like the record?
It doesn't matter.
Oh, man. I didn't realize that we were going to have the unbiased thing on the opinion of music. But, okay, so let's talk about this. What's sad, I think, and you reveal it in your piece, is that the music business itself, or factions of it, in some ways are conspiring against the Dixie Chicks. Out of what? Do you think it's spite or just business?
I don't think the premise of your question is reflected in my story in any way.
No, I mean that Clear Channel has made decisions to not air the piece, whether it was because they were written to by listeners or for whatever reason. And when Clear Channel country outlets don't play the record, I mean, it's obviously going to have dire implications to the success of the record.
Well, look, I mean, a lot of country stations aren't playing the record.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. The words Clear Channel don't appear in my story. I don't know anything about Clear Channel having some, you know, agenda against the Dixie Chicks.
Hey, we're on Clear Channel. I'm not trying to knock them. I'll just, all right, so many country music stations aren't playing.
And my sense is that it's a combination of factors. I think, you know, there's, for whatever reason, a lot of listeners have said they don't want to hear it, which I guess radio programmers care about.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really a country record in many people's estimation. It's more of a sort of country-ish, you know, adult rock record.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think there's a lot of anger in the country music community over various remarks the musicians in the Dixie Chicks have made over the last months and years. One of the band members repeatedly in a 60 Minutes interview referred to mainstream country fans as rednecks. You know, I think that these constituencies don't really appreciate being characterized that way. You know, gratitude is a big thing in country music, and this kind of notion of a you know, relationship between artists and their fans, whether it's a real, you know, whether that notion reflects reality, I don't know. But, you know, the Dixie Chicks get a lot of knocks for not doing things like attending Fanfare, which is this big kind of convention in Nashville every year where it's sort of like a trade show where the booths are manned by country stars and fans can come
right
in and, you know, get autographs and stuff. And
so I see this as it's an incredible gamble on behalf of this band. To reinvent themselves and believe that they can, you know, regenerate or grow a new fan base for a different style, for an evolution in style.
I think you're absolutely right. I think the word gamble is the perfect word for what they're doing. And, you know, it looks like, you know, they made a high-stakes gamble, and it's not entirely clear what the outcome's going to be, but it looks like they may have come up on the losing side of that bet
for right now. So
for,
I mean,
for the moment, and I mean, part the clearest way in which they're you know, really sort of literally gambling with money is the way they structured the deal to promote this tour they're on right now.
Yeah.
Or they're planning right now. It's starting in July. You know, rather than taking a guaranteed payment of at least $500,000 per show from the tour's promoters, versus then getting 90% of the box office gross over and above that,
right?
They went for 95% of the box office gross and no guaranteed payment, and that's really where they are getting into trouble. Ticket sales are too slow, it appears, to support that riskier model from their perspective.
This is for the U.S. tour, and they were playing big venues. Now you said in your piece, and I'm pretty sure that you said this, that they're going to do okay in some places, but some places they're not going to do okay. Their record just dropped to number two. They're selling a lot of records,
yeah.
But that is not the way that bands make money in this new music economy. They got to sell tickets. Now, what I don't understand is, I think they overreached a little bit, and they didn't really realize the repercussions of this shift in attitude and style. And they should have done extended, like, 2 or 3 day runs at smaller halls.
Maybe they should have done that. Maybe they should have just taken the money, you know?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
You know, they would have gotten $30 million cash on the barrelhead. You know, that's not too shabby.
Yeah.
I don't know. That might have worked out better for them.
Why do you think they're not selling tickets in, like, places like the North and, you know, in other places?
Well, the thing that's a little weird about it, I mean, this is why it's kind of a funny subject. Their sales are too slow to support the kind of deal they've structured.
Right.
I believe, I'm not entirely sure about this, but I believe that the sales would have been good enough under a traditional structure.
Uh-huh.
You know, they would have made their money. The promoter, usually promoters need only to sell about half the seats in a house to make money. They can then give away tickets in various ways and fill the place up and get people in to buy beer or whatever, and and they do okay. It's only when somebody's really actually relying on the box office take to make their payday that they really need big sales. So that said, I'm not sure they're actually selling that much worse than a number of other artists this summer.
Okay.
But they're clearly selling below what they expected to do, obviously, because they're, rerouting in like half the tour. So why that is, it's a little hard to say, but, some radio stations are not airing ads for their concerts. That's got to be hurting them. The song, for a variety of reasons, the two singles they've released are not getting a lot of airplay on country radio where you'd expect them to find their fans. So, even though the record's selling pretty well, they a concert ticket is a much bigger investment for a fan, and they're just not getting the exposure, I think.
But they're kicking ass internationally.
They're doing better internationally than they have in the past, for sure. They're doing great in Canada. They've always been pretty big in Canada. Now they're, doing gangbusters there, adding dates. People love them in Canada. They've always been just sort of big-ish in Europe and Australia. Now, from what I hear, their single's really doing really well on the radio in those markets, and early demand for the album is really high. And, it appears attributable to this, business over remarks they made about the president 3 years ago.
Well, so that actually worked for them internationally. That's hilarious.
Yeah, it's like they're they were reviled in this country for saying it, and, I guess people overseas thought, thought they were heroes.
Well, let me tell you, we just got there's news out today that a poll taken around the world says that, the image of the U.S. is worsening.
Right.
So it's interesting that would make that would be good for the Dixie Chicks. Well, I guess what they're going to have to do, and we got to end up here, close up this interview, is that they're going to have to get the Sheryl Crow fans and the adult contemporary people to like them and shift gears.
That's what they're trying to do right now.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Ethan Smith.
Talking
to you, man. Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. All right. All right, so more Dixie Chicks. We're going to come back, and you're going to do some poetry, Jim? Is that what I understand?
Yes, I have a poem.
Terrific. Is this fresh?
It's fresh.
Okay, fresh poetry coming up next.
He's the new hip party pill, Marc Maron.
You going to be all right, man? You taking any medicine?
No, not at all.
What do vegan hippies like yourself do when you get
good
a cold?
Good thoughts. Good thoughts. Clean living. Good thoughts.
You?
I'm not letting your negativity envelop me like a bad virus. I'm not letting that happen.
You know what's so
I'm
weird?
I'm in my area. You're in your area.
But you know what's interesting about that statement, really, is that I feel the same way about you. I feel that you're being negative.
So much projecting. So much projecting.
You tell me you're not negative?
You're a very projecting person. I'm sorry for that piece of negativity that I slung from myself onto you. It must be because I'm not feeling very well. But excuse me for that. Excuse that. Let me rephrase what
this
I just said.
It's like Jim's one-man show. The guy I wish I was.
Let me rephrase. Let me rephrase that. Yeah. Make it up to you. You're a very negative person.
I'm not negative.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
You're just, now who's projecting now? I am really not negative. I think if you were to take a poll on the blog, markmaron.com, markmaron.com, let's take a poll on who's more negative.
Right.
All right? Who deserves the nickname Buzzkill? Okay. Mm-hmm. Who's more negative?
Okay, Buzzkill or Sir Screams a Lot?
But that's not negative. Screaming's not negative.
No, of course not. No.
Sometimes it's passionate.
You ever seen a cat who lives in an apartment where everybody screams? No, you haven't, because they're cowering somewhere in the corner underneath the bed.
My cats don't cower, and if you're comparing yourself to a cat, I don't see you cowering. And I think that you misunderstand, if I can quote the president, your negativity. But we're going to take a poll, and you're going to read some poetry now, which I'm sure is very uplifting. We'll tell from the poem that the power of poetry and how uplifting your spirit is. Are we going to do it? It's Poetry Corner with Jim Buzzkill Earl.
This is one. This one's called Refrigerator Notes. We're all adults here. We all do our part. Maybe we can keep this place clean. God is love. Trish. P.S. Who is that asshole who moved my rare collector series of Pepsi Looney Tunes drinking glasses? I repeat, they are not to be used for liquids. Thanks. People, this weekly house meeting assignments are now listed as Tiffany, Mondays, Sandy, Tuesdays, Trish, Wednesdays, Flora Marina Celestina Gonzalez, Thursdays through Sundays. Later, Trish. Ladies, I am tired of finding used condoms in my rock polisher. I gave you the benefit of the doubt the first few times, but now I just think you're screwing with my head. P.S. I am not a lesbian. I just work for the fire department. Trish. Girls, has anyone seen Peanut? I specifically recall latching the hamster cage before leaving for yoga. P.S. Stop unplugging my rock polisher. I realize it's noisy at night, but we have a long ways to go before that Japanese garden is finished. House meeting at 6 a.m. Signed, Trish. Ladies, I want to know who put Peanut in my rock polisher. It took Flora Maria 3 hours to clean up. Are you guys serious about that Japanese garden or not? House meeting, 6 a.m. P.S. I am not a lesbian. I just work for the fire department. Thank you.
Isn't that weird? Because that would actually be in some places that just the amount of applause you would get. It's just this.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was good, man. That was good. That was good. That was good poetry. You've used that theme before. You've used that structure before. The refrigerator notes.
Yeah, well, it's a very important ongoing thing.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that.
You ever lived with anybody else?
Sure, I have. Are you kidding me? I was a couch dweller for many years. I've lived with some famous friends of ours. Name the comics you've lived with. I lived with, I'll tell you who I lived with. I used to sleep on Dave Cross's bed when he was at his girlfriend's house, and then I'd sleep on the couch in the living room of what used to be called the Loser Museum in Somerville, Massachusetts. There were many people that lived there, many comics. Another point in my life, I lived with Pete Berg, who is now a director and actor, and also Steve Brill, who is also a director.
Brill.
People who live with me go on to great success. And myself, I sort of percolate along at my level of success. But I think it's the gifts that I give that you apparently are closed off to. Because you're looking a gift horse in the mouth here, Jim. I put out a vibe.
Really?
That makes people successful. Now, some people would say, Mark, it probably has nothing to do with you. Think what you want, okay? I'm a believer in shamanism.
You know what? I believe that, Mark. I believe what you're saying. Yeah. I don't want to be negative right now. I just, you know, I believe you believe what you're saying, and because of that, because of my faith in you and your ability to go along with whatever's happening, let things roll off your back, yeah. I will go along with it as well.
I lived in a group house once in Somerville. That was a different group house. The other one was in Cambridge, the one that I lived with Dave Cross. The Somerville house was this huge house, mm-hmm. and I lived in the attic room, right. and it was blue. Someone had painted it blue. It was a blue pointed room that I lived in to begin with. That was a rough time. I was working at a coffee shop, and all I did all day was they used to serve the coffee in the push things, the podiums. You know what I'm talking about? The mm-hmm. plunge things. Mm-hmm. And it was before Starbucks. It was the Coffee Connection in Harvard Square. And all you would do is sit there and drink coffee from all over the world all day long. I was up all the night, all the time, in my blue attic room, freaking out. But you know who lived in that house before I did?
Manson?
Tracy Chapman. And do you think that I had anything to do with her tremendous success because she lived in the house before I moved in?
No.
Well, I don't know if that's true. You know, if you want to not believe, it's up to you. You know, if you want to, if your life is that narrow, all right. We got Marjorie Cohn is coming in here from truthout.org to talk about Gitmo and Aaron Watada. Stay with us.
Now, let me know if you have any questions. Mark Maron.
Thanks, Jim. Can you throw me a pen? Oh, thanks, buddy. I'm excited about our next guest. I read her work frequently. I'm just going to make a little correction here on her intro. Marjorie Cohn is a professor of law at Thomas Jefferson School of Law. She lectures throughout the world on international human rights and U.S. foreign policy. She's a news consultant for CBS News, a legal analyst for Court TV. She provides legal and political commentary on BBC, CNN, MSNBC, even Fox News, NPR, Pacifica Radio. She's a co-author of the book Cameras in the Courtroom, Television, and the Pursuit of Justice. I am familiar with her from her work on truthout.org. She is with us on the phone now. Welcome to the show, Marjorie Cohn.
My pleasure, Mark.
I'm so glad you're here because now I just want to say before we get started that I'm a little bit retarded when it comes to international law, and I'm going to need some help. So could you please tell me if you can briefly, about why the Geneva Conventions were put into place and what are the Nuremberg Principles and the UN Charter? How do they all apply to warfare?
Okay, first of all, I just want to correct you. This is not international law. This is U.S. law.
Right.
Treaties that we ratify are part of the supreme law of the land under the Supremacy Clause. So when Bush talks about, oh, that's international law, that is U.S. law. The Nuremberg Tribunal and the Nuremberg Principles came after World War II when the victorious powers set up a tribunal to try the Nazi leaders for war crimes,
right.
crimes against humanity and genocide.
And that's when they were defined.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
The Nuremberg, okay, the Geneva Conventions have to do with the laws of war and how war should be conducted, and they set forth war crimes. Willful killing, torture, inhumane treatment, those are considered to be war crimes. Now, keep in mind that we have a U.S. law, a U.S. statute called the War Crimes Act, where people can be prosecuted criminally for violation of those Geneva Convention war crimes.
Okay. So now let's move on to Guantanamo Bay. Now, despite the suicides earlier this week being portrayed by the right as some sort of publicity stunt or political statement, I mean, what it really shows is that the hopelessness and feelings of futility on behalf of a prison population that hasn't been charged, has no legal recourse and no sentence other than an indefinite one. Now, how can this transgression of what you're talking about, international law, all legal standards, for that matter, be allowed to continue?
Well, that's a really good question. How can this torture continue and this inhumane treatment after the Abu Ghraib revelation?
Right.
How can the war crimes continue after the Haditha massacre? It is continuing. And, you know, it's important to keep in mind that these three people committed suicide, but there have been many, many suicide attempts before that, and at least a third of the prisoners at Guantanamo have gone on hunger fasts
right.
because they've decided that death is preferable to life. And so what the U.S. authorities have been doing doing is force-feeding them, sticking, and I hope your readers have strong stomachs.
Yeah.
They stick large tubes down their noses into their stomachs, no anesthesia, no sedative, and when the tube is removed, it's so painful, they describe it as unbearable. The pain, the blood comes gushing out. They put it in. They take it out. It's torture. The UN has called it torture. And in fact, doctors are participating in spite of prohibitions by the AMA, the World Medical Organization, and every other human rights organization. And so we're force-feeding prisoners, and it's also a violation. The International Committee of the Red Cross says doctors should never be party to coercive force-feeding, even, you know, it's a form of torture.
So Marjorie Cohn, it seems like there is all these horrendous transgressions, breaking of international laws, breaking of, I imagine, some of our own laws here in this country, that I don't understand how the Justice Department, how the president can go on doing this if there's proof and there's all indications that these laws are being broken. I mean, what has to give? What do we have to do?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because the Boston Globe came out with an article recently that Bush has basically reserved the right to disobey more than 750 laws that he's signed. He attaches signing statements. This is a president who thinks he's above the law. He has destroyed the separation of powers. He has decided he's above the law. And every time Congress makes any move to try to limit him, he pulls out the 9/11 card. He says, oh, you're soft on terror. You know, there was an article in the New York Times on Monday about the suicides at Guantanamo. And this is what the New York Times said. Democrats, this is about the suicides at Guantanamo.
Yeah.
Democrats in the United States said little, apparently concerned about appearing to be sympathizing with detainees who could turn out to have significant terrorist connections. Asleep at the wheel. They're asleep at the wheel.
Yes, and also outnumbered and in a compromised position. But I'm not being sympathetic. I think they should speak out. I think all of them should speak out.
You know, when Russ Feingold made a motion to censor Bush for spying on us illegally without a warrant, the Democrats sat on their hands.
The
all
worst.
But one or two.
They're just
it's an
worst.
Outrage.
It is. It's absolutely an outrage. Now let me ask you about as a lawyer. What should be the appropriate approach to these detainees?
Well, what should be the approach is that we should follow the Constitution. If there's probable cause to believe that any of these individuals have committed a crime, charge them with a crime. Go through a judicial process with due process and constitutional protections, which we are bound to follow. If they're not, release them. But don't hold them indefinitely, more than 4 years, languishing in Never Never Land. No wonder they're hopeless. No wonder they feel hopeless. One of the guys who committed suicide was about to be released, and they never bothered to tell him because they hadn't figured out where to send him.
That's
just an outrage.
It's horrendous. Now, why haven't these detainees been charged?
That's a good question. That's a very good question. Why haven't they? Because Bush has decided only to charge 10 out of the 460-some that are there under his military commissions, which are basically kangaroo courts that he set up to deny them due process. You can be executed without ever going to a court, just on the say-so of George W. Bush.
Well, it's frightening that a lot of Americans think that this is somehow strength, that this is the way that this should be waged. I mean, this is it's tyranny in this country.
It's unbelievable. I mean, the 9/11 attacks were horrific, but what Bush has done, invading a sovereign country that posed no threat to us, that had no terrorism in it before, it had Saddam Hussein, but now people are coming back. I just heard a reporter from the Christian Science Monitor who's there on the ground saying that Iraqis are saying, boy, we wish for the good old days when Saddam was here, when we didn't have security problems, when we had electricity, when we had water. He's getting away with that. He's getting away with this. The Supreme Court will decide this month whether or not these military commissions are constitutional and whether or not the prisoners at Guantanamo can go into U.S. courts and file habeas corpus writs to challenge their confinement.
Is there any hope that this Supreme Court will be fair in this matter?
We'll see. I mean, it remains to be seen. I think some of them still believe in due process, and I'm hopeful.
Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about, I know you wrote a piece on Aaron Watada, the first lieutenant in the Army who has refused to go to Iraq on the grounds that it is an illegal war. I think this would be a great case to take to court, wouldn't you?
It would be. You know, the thing is that he said he's the first officer to publicly refuse to go. I mean, there have been other officers, about 10, who have refused to go but haven't made a big fuss over it and haven't made a big public thing over it, and something like 80-some enlisted people. But he is saying, he called a press conference, and he's a very dignified, very respectful guy, and he said he saw the pain and suffering of soldiers and their families and innocent Iraqis, and that this is an illegal war. He doesn't want to be party to war crimes. And if you look at the law, you look at the Nuremberg Charter and the U.S. Army Field Manual, there are three main crimes, the most serious crimes in the world, crimes against the peace, war crimes, and crimes against humanity. And I actually testified or spoke at his press conference and then wrote an article for Truth Out saying that we are committing all three in Iraq. This is an illegal war. It's an aggressive war. That's a crime against the peace because the U.N. Charter, we're violating the U.N. Charter. It was not done in self-defense. The Security Council never sanctioned it. That's called a crime against aggression or a crime against the peace. Secondly, war crimes, violations of the Geneva Conventions. We're committing war crimes. We've committed war crimes in Fallujah by invading that country and killing 4,000 to 6,000 civilians, using poisonous weapons, shooting into ambulances, not letting doctors treat patients, shutting down hospitals, calling it a free fire zone, shoot at anything that moves, and we're about to do the same in Ramadi again. Those are war crimes, and
yeah,
they're punishable under the war crime statute. And finally, crimes against humanity.
Now, if one was to build a case, if you were to get lawyers together to do all this work pro bono, where would a case like this be heard?
It would be heard in a federal court. And by the way, the Center for Constitutional Rights and the National Lawyers Guild, and I believe the ACLU have been filing lawsuits. But in terms of these particular cases, this is going to come up probably through a court martial.
Mm-hmm.
This particular issue, the way Pablo Paredes was court martialed in San Diego, I testified at his court martial, and so I don't think that the Army's going to take this lying down when you have an officer coming out publicly and saying this is an illegal war and it's an illegal order. And that's another thing to keep in mind as well. He's under the Uniform Code of Military Justice, there's a duty. Military personnel have a duty to obey lawful orders. The Nuremberg Principles, which are part of our law, say that military personnel have the duty not to obey illegal orders, and the Army Field Manual and the Uniform Code of Military Justice both incorporate this principle. So he is saying this is an illegal war. People are committing war crimes. If I go over there, I will be violating the law. This is an illegal order. I'm disobeying it. And eventually, this will get into the courts. It'll start at the court-martial level, and it will be appealed eventually, if not in his case, in the next case, and a district court will rule on it. But it would take a tremendous amount of guts for a judge to say this is an illegal war and an order to go to an illegal war is an illegal order. That's the law, but again, it takes tremendous courage for a judge to say that.
Is that possible?
Sure, it's possible.
All right, well, that's great. I mean, because I think that if this thing does get to court, if it gets the proper coverage, and I'd love to cover it, I'm gonna hopefully talk to Aaron Watada later in the week. I think symbolically it would have a lot of impact.
I think it would. Symbolically, and also it might give some strength to other judges to do the same kind of thing. If you look at Pablo Paredes' court-martial, he was a seaman. He was in the Navy. He was ordered to transport Marines to Iraq. He would not have been in personal danger. And he said very much what Lieutenant Watada is saying. This is an illegal war. If I transport Marines to fight in an illegal war and be put in a position to maybe commit war crimes, then I will be complicit as well. This is an illegal order, and I'm not going to obey it. He got convicted at his court-martial. Marshall, I testified in the sentencing phase, and the prosecution did such a bad job of cross-examining me and brought out the illegality of the wars in Afghanistan and Yugoslavia as well.
Mm-hmm.
And the judge ended up saying that during the sentencing, after my testimony, that the government has just proved that any service member would have a reasonable belief that the wars in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Yugoslavia were illegal.
Well, that's great.
That's astounding
yeah.
for a lieutenant commander in the Navy to say at a court-martial.
That's great. Well, Marjorie Cohn, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Mark. Take care.
You take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So, wow, I hope that this thing makes it that far, and I hope we can get an interview with Aaron Watada, because I think it's powerful stuff, and I have not heard anything like it. And when you talk to her, you know, this stuff goes on, and it's not reported. I don't know about that case. Maybe I just should read more. So we'll come back, and you and I will, I'm sure, have a friendly conversation about something like we always do.
About the Geneva Convention, perhaps?
Did you learn a little something? I had to learn a little some stuff. I knew some of that stuff, but I wanted her to tell me specifically.
Yeah, I learned something about that, yeah.
Okay, good. We'll be back in a second.
Stay tuned for 3 minutes of crap. That's right, Mark Maron's short order news is coming up next.
And now he's vowed to teach creationism in bed, Mark Maron.
I am God. Look at it.
I'm sure that's worked on a lot of chicks.
You'd be surprised. When I look back at my life, it's amazing what's worked on some women. And I think it was all pretty honest. I think that generally for me, when I was with a woman, or that I was very...
Or a man.
Passionate. No, not so much.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
That's all right. I don't need to go into it. What I wanted to talk about was this idea, you know, you got President Bush there in Iraq talking about how, you know, he refused to give a timetable, he refused to give a benchmark for success that would allow troops to come home. And from all indications, the unbelievable thing is that around the world, we are hated because we no longer represent a barometer of any sort of integrity or decency. And in Iraq, it's become clear that we are exacerbating a situation. That if you read the stuff on Zarqawi, if he achieved even half of the goals that he was trying to achieve before he died, we have to assume that that guy dispatched maybe hundreds of international terrorists around the world to do the bidding of Al-Qaeda or splinter groups. And it's amazing that when you read the statistics, that the international terrorism is worse now than it was in 2001. All right, this is according to State Department data. All right, the number of significant international terrorist attacks tripled to 650 in 2004. In 2005, international terrorist attacks spiked again. They wouldn't even release the numbers. But another administration agency, the National Counterterrorism Threat Center, found 3,192 incidents of international terrorism occurred last year. And that's resulting in the deaths, injury, or kidnapping of 28,500 people. Now, the bottom line is that like people like John Boehner in the Congress, the new majority leader, he's making this resolution saying that we have to apply this the principles of what we're doing in Iraq to this war on terror, that the war in Iraq is the war on terror, and it's not. The two of them have nothing to do with each other. We, from all indications, these are experts in numbers, are losing the global war on terrorism because of our presence in Iraq, and we are not facilitating, you know, any ability on behalf of the Iraqis to deal with this civil war that we are standing in the middle of. So we're facilitating more terrorism in the world, and we're exacerbating the civil war in Iraq by staying there, because these idiots refuse.
But the positive side is this, Mark.
Yeah.
We are still winning the war with our cigarettes, food, and our music. They love our culture.
Yeah.
They can't beat our culture.
Yeah.
And we're going to win them with that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you've got Burger King. You've got the Dixie Chicks.
Cigarettes.
Over there.
Yeah.
Cigarettes, sure. Yeah.
I mean, Iran loves our culture.
Yeah, they do, actually.
Yeah.
But they also hate their government. There's a weird friction between the religious government and the hipsters of Iran. They've kind of figured out a way to live with them, but they're not on board. They're very insulated, the government in Iran.
Like ours.
Yeah, exactly, for some people. So let's do this. Let's get you informed today. We don't want you to be caught off guard. Here's the new, at the end of the show, short order news. Just back from his 5.5-hour trip to Baghdad, President Bush said he was upbeat about Iraqis securing their country. The president said the feeling of freedom in Baghdad was comparable to the Berlin Wall coming down. Except in this case, thousands and thousands of walls came down. Earlier, as he looked out the window on Air Force One, the president commented on the devastated look of the city until someone reminded him that those were the neighborhoods of Washington, D.C. Washington, D.C. No meta. Thousands of pounds of armor added to military Humvees intended to protect U.S. troops have made the vehicles more likely to roll over. The Army plans to fit the vehicles with a modified GPS technology so the Humvees only roll over onto Iraqis. After reporters pointed out that wild marijuana was growing on the lawn at the federal courthouse in Sioux Falls, the ditch weed was eliminated. Families in the area now understand why most of their kids volunteered to mow the courthouse lawn for the last few years. Laughing Andy. Did you ever grow your own pot, dude? No? Never grew your hydroponic in the basement? Hey, how come our electric bill is $30,000? That seems a lot for an electric bill. Maybe if you didn't grow pot in the basement with those damn lights. Folks, tomorrow we got a big show. Sam Cedar will actually be here in person because he will be appearing at 826 LA. That's 685 Venice Boulevard, second floor. The cross street is Oakwood. Tomorrow night at 8 o'clock, I will be introducing him with a few jokes and barbs, perhaps.
Sam Cedar again?
Tomorrow, yeah. Eric Bollert, the author, is going to tell us how the press became the lapdogs to the president. And Paul F. Tompkins, the funny man, will be here to be funny. And Johnny K Street. So, good night, Chief. Well, I hope the stream works. Did we stream?